Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. House and Senate budget negotiators finally came to an agreement this week on a two-year spending plan, more than 2 months late. The budget cut taxes again for corporations and the wealthy, gives most state employees and teachers a small one-time bonus instead of a raise, and doesn't restore many of the cuts to education and human services made in the last few years. Here to talk about the budget and the refusal by a Kentucky official to allow same-sex couples to marry is Rick Glaser, Executive Director of the North Carolina Justice Center. Well, thanks for being with us on News and Views, Rick. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks, Chris.
Well, let's jump in and talk about what's happening. We know a lot more of the budget details now that after a long, arduous process. What's your overall take on the conference committee report?
Well, you know, I think first one should talk about the process, which was a process done perhaps in the least transparent way in the last 20 years. And that's saying something given how it used to be 10, 15 years ago. And I think that's not helpful to anybody, not to the public, and certainly not to the people making the budget because they receive no input except from the vacuum they're talking to. From a substantive point of view, it's, it continues to take us down the wrong path. It lacks any serious vision or investment in the future of the state, either in public education, and in fact certainly hurts the university system pretty significantly. And it lacks any real investment in the infrastructure of the state. Now, we'll see the bond package that's probably going to come out next week, which will be a reduced bond package over what the House passed. But I think this idea that you can continue, as and most states have done this, have found out you can't, but we're embarking on this idea that you can continue to cut taxes and not invest in the future of your state and assume you've met your generational burden. And that's just not true. I think every state that has tried this path has found it to be unsuccessful, and yet we seem determined to head the same way.
Tax cuts were again a priority, more than $400 million worth of tax cuts over the next 2 years at the same time that we hear from legislative leaders that there's not money to address other priorities.
I think that's exactly right. And there isn't, they're right, there isn't that much money to address other priorities, but it's all a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, they've made the determination that initially under the auspices that we were recovering from the recession, which may have made some sense at one time, but we're past the recession. Most states are growing, certainly faster than North Carolina. Most states have less unemployment than North Carolina. Most states have re-engaged in their educational systems, their health and human services safety nets, and their transportation infrastructure. We've done none of that. And this budget really puts a little bit in a few places and says, look at what we've done, without even considering the hundreds of millions, indeed probably billion plus, of cuts that are continuing year after year. And I think what's going to happen, I think we've reached a tipping point in terms of our personnel, both in state government and in the education system. And good personnel are simply going to be leaving because there's no sign of any change in the downward progression.
It's interesting when you hear the spin from the folks who put the budget together, and they claim they boast of the new education funding. And I think it's hard sometimes to communicate to people how the nuances of a budget. But interesting to me that they claim credit for funding enrollment increases or funding things that used to be assumed we would do.
One would think that when we enroll a child in school that it would be just purely operational to pay for them and not to claim credit that we're doing something new. I look at the educational budget here in sort of a simple scenario. They're putting on a few shingles for a new roof while the foundation is burning and collapsing. So what good is the new roof when you have nothing left of the house? And I think that's exactly where we're headed. I mean, the salary increases were minuscule when we're 46th, 47th in the nation. We're 51st in principal pay. We did very little to change that. We're 47th in per pupil expenditure. We did almost nothing to change that. And so the majority, I think, will parade around its digital increase, its slight increase in textbooks, which is good. And at the same time, we're sitting there looking at the base allocations, the base infrastructure of the system received almost nothing.
You mentioned the university system. How many more years can we continue to make cuts in our university system?
Well, we can't. We're losing lots of talented faculty, and with it, by the way, research dollars and economic drivers for the state in large measure to South Carolina. Whoever thought we'd be losing it to South Carolina, to Connecticut, to Georgia. For heaven's sakes, almost every southern state, including Mississippi, is investing more on a percentage basis or reinvesting than we are. And so I think although it was terrible that Tom Ross is leaving, he may be happy in the end that he doesn't have to deal with what's a continuing almost assault on the university, the public university system in the state that this budget seems to genuinely be doing.
Another area of the budget that's gotten a lot of attention are the tax credits for economic development over continuing a solar tax credit, the renewable energy portfolio standard, which was allowed to expire. How important is that?
Extremely important. It's we had, up until this year, we had the third largest renewable energy economy in the nation. And in the end, although we should be happy about one thing, they reinstated what they threatened to cut, which was the historic preservation tax credits, which are important for cities. You sort of give with one hand and then take away a far larger impact credit with the solar industry, and it makes no sense. There's no good economic reason. There's certainly no good health or energy policy reason to have done that. And I think it's going to just shift lots of industry and jobs away from the state.
I want to get back to something you said at the very beginning, sort of the philosophy of government. The folks who pass this budget will tell you that they are trying to control spending, that the amount of spending is the most important thing, and that cutting taxes will create dramatic economic growth, which will benefit us all more than investing in programs that we believe in.
Yeah, and exactly where has that worked? You know, we've had a lot of empirical evidence over decades, going back to the initial part of the Reagan administration. And it's not worked on the national scale. Reagan's economic policy folks like David Stockman from way back when say, you know, that is never exactly what we said. And when we went that route to some degree, we had to modify it to begin with. It has certainly not worked in any state. Take a look at Kansas and what's happened to them. And so for an administration that likes to tout that it looks at evidence-based research, empirical data, it does except when it doesn't like what it sees, and then it doesn't matter. And that, I think, is really frustrating for a lot of people and ought to be very scary, actually, I think, for the public. And that is, you have to get past your ideology. You have to govern. This budget's more about ideology than it is about governing the state.
Finally, before I let you go, I want to ask you about your shifting roles. The last time we talked to you, you were a member of the General Assembly. Now you're the Executive Director of the North Carolina Justice Center. You spent a long time in the General Assembly. What precipitated the move, and what are your thoughts as you start your new role?
Well, it's been a good couple first weeks. And, you know, precipitation of it really was a lot of what we've been talking about. And that is my thinking that after 13 years, I'd done what I could do with my colleagues that I thought in the legislature. And I felt that there was a more useful way I could be productive in working to fight the injustices that I think that are taking place in North Carolina, and to try to gain some ground back to the progressive state this once was. I gave a speech this weekend, actually, at an NAACP event in Fayetteville, and the title was Pursuing Injustice. And what I talked about there was this idea that when you fight injustice against anyone, you end up, surprisingly, finding liberty for everyone. And I think we have a lot of injustice that's going on in the state, a lot of issues that state policy is playing ostrich to, and a lot of people being hurt. And I think the goal of government to me was always to alleviate human suffering wherever you could. And I think maybe now outside influences, outside work, both in the courts, in communities, and at the legislature, need to combine to find a way to a better path for the future of this state.
Well, then let's end with one more question, which is about injustice. A county clerk in Kentucky, Kim Davis, has gotten national acclaim from the religious right for refusing to marry same-sex couples who have the legal right to be married. The North Carolina General Assembly has voted to allow magistrates in North Carolina to refuse to marry couples out of a religious belief. What do you make of this whole sort of backlash against equality?
Well, that's what it is. It's the newest abandonment of equal justice under the law, and patently unconstitutional, just as the North Carolina bill will one day be found when and if there ever becomes a circumstance, perhaps in McDowell County, it looks like, where people are being refused the right to marry that the Supreme Court says is the law of the land. The First Amendment is a protection for personal rights against governmental interference of those rights. It is not a protection of government officials in their governmental capacity from the rights of people guaranteed by the Constitution. How bizarre. And if Kim Davis wants and believes so deeply in her right, and I believe she does, in her personal belief, she has the absolute right to that. She has no right to that belief in her infliction of governmental policy on other people. So she has a simple choice. The choice is, if that bothers you so deeply, then you know what? Don't take taxpayer money find a job that meets and fulfills you in a different way. But you have no right to inflict your personal beliefs as a government official on the citizens who pay your salary.
Well, let's hope that we come to our senses soon. Thank you very much for what you're doing. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great week.
Up next, the effect of the anti-immigrant rhetoric in the presidential race. Stay with us.